You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Today I'm going to give you an update of what happened, and I think an historic filibuster, although technically it probably wasn't, by Ted Cruz in the Senate, who spoke a record over 21 hours. I believe the more or less time was 21 hours and 19 minutes. Now, no one's going to listen to 21 hours and 19 minutes, but I do urge you to listen to definitely the beginning. And I will be posting, it'll probably not be tomorrow, but by Friday, I should be caught up with all my past shows, with the exception of the Friday show. I completed editing my Friday show. Obviously, two shows behind after I finish this. I'll have three, but one of them is fairly short, less than an hour. This will probably be a little less than an hour. So I should, I'm aiming for having every show up except the, well, Friday show. Once I post that, you will have access to, for those that are first-time listeners, you go to the companion blog to this show, which is pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops.wordpress.com, pronkpops.wordpress.com. At the very top, you'll have links to, at the very top, the last 8 to 12 shows, and then under that, you have a complete archive of all my shows. And I would say most of my listeners, over 99% of my listeners, listen to the show. Either they stream it or they download it, put it on their iPad, and listen to it at their convenience. So that's why I point that out. Now, usually what I do with my shows is have notes. And most of it, though, the majority of it is YouTube videos that are related to the topic I'm speaking on, as well as photographs, photos, images, cartoons, tables, graphics, as well as news articles on the news events that I'm commenting on. So that's why I point this out, because most students, because when they're on campus, they're going to courses. They're going to classes. They're taking courses here. And they don't have time to listen to the KDUX web radio, whether it's music or a talk show. My show is strictly a talk show. We don't have call-ins. We don't have commercials. So it's listening to me for about an hour. And what I do is comment upon the leading news stories or the leading news events and give my opinions and comments on them. And I have to be somewhat selective because I only have an hour to do that, actually a little less than an hour. I usually start a little bit, like most commercial radio shows, I start usually 5 to 6 minutes after the hour and on the hour, or some cases a little off. So typically I'll have an hour show is really 55 minutes. Sometimes it's an hour. Occasionally, if the studio is open, I will continue beyond the hour. But the only shows that are really more than an hour are my Friday shows. And there I have a 3 to 5 time slot. And where I have a lot of material, I might go an extra half hour, hour. And I call that my special edition. So if you're new to the Pronk Pop Show, I have an hour show Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and a two-hour show Friday from 3 to 5. Most days the show is 4 to 5. We do have a scheduling change. Instead of being on from 4 to 5, we have someone else that's going to be presenting a music show with comments from 4 to 5. I'm going to be on 3 to 4. However, if that person decides that this is not her cup of tea, because a lot of students will start, they're very enthusiastic, but if they're taking, you know, 3, 4, 5 courses, they quickly find out they have to prepare the show. That becomes a burden, and the history is this. A lot of the students simply don't continue. They're not persistent. They're not serious about it. I'm very serious about it. My goal is to have a national syndicated radio, talk radio show, and that's my focus. So I need to prepare every day and get better, better, and better, and I have, I believe, objectively have since I started it. This is my, I think, going on my third year, but until really 2 weeks ago, I did not, it was a weekly show. Initially, it started out to be an hour show, then a two-hour show, occasionally a three- or four-hour show, but it was only one time a week. Starting this fall, 2 weeks ago, I started my daily show because I need to get comfortable with that format. And ultimately, what we'll have is a two-hour show, and I'm shooting for a three- to five time period, Monday through Friday, where Friday will be a weekly wrap-up of the leading news stories, because usually on these news stories there's some updates or some points that I might not have gone into detail or maybe not even mentioned. So that's what I typically will be doing Friday, since I'm going to a daily show. I give that as a way of introduction because we're having some changes in the schedule, and we've had a lot of news events, especially this week. It's been rather a rich environment. I have not covered some major events that I normally would, including the shootings in Kenya. And I hopefully will do that in the near future. And one reason I stayed away from it, you get a lot of bad information initially. And so I said I'll wait, intentionally waited to the episode is completed, in the sense that they've captured or killed all the terrorists. They have details as to who died, who was rescued, what went on, and we're still not getting all that information out. But hopefully in the next couple of days, most likely my Friday show, but it could be next week, I fully intend to devote at least one of the shows to that, because I think there are lessons learned, because what happened in Kenya could easily happen anywhere in the United States. And at least several of the people were from the United States. I think one or two were from the United Kingdom. I'm talking the terrorists. Now, their victims were Europeans, were, I believe, Americans. Now, many of them escaped. So I'll get on that. What I want to do today is really focus in on what happened over the last 24 hours, namely Ted Cruz's speech on the Senate floor. He went over 21 hours speaking. That is a challenge. I know it's a challenge because I can typically speak 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, but I'm sitting down. I'm not standing up. Now, I usually don't drink or eat when I'm on the air, but if I had to do it for a longer period, especially if I had to stand up, I would definitely, because what happens a lot of times, but on a few occasions, my voice gets very dry, and at least on one occasion that I can remember, I couldn't talk for a minute or two. You stress your vocal cords too much, so you got to be careful. Usually, point of information, yes, I usually have something to eat and drink 2 hours ahead, but when I'm on the air and right up to the time I'm on the air, I don't drink or eat anything. And usually what I do after the show is over, yes, I have some soda or diet cola. It's usually what I have, and I might have some Pop-Tarts or what, some snack to get my energy up, because talking for 2 hours, it can be fatiguing. Talk three or four, it's definitely fatiguing. If you had to do it standing up, I have nothing but respect for what Senator Cruz did. He's the senator from Texas, our junior senator from Texas, but he was really impressive. He was coherent, expressive throughout the 21 hours. And you see what's interesting, the mainstream media is trying to demonize him. You know, the Democrats can't stand him. They literally can't stand him. And the mainstream medium, that's media, your major television networks, they don't like him either. And the reason why they don't like him is he's telling truth to power. He is telling truth to power. He's telling the American people what's going on, and he's telling the American people what goes on in the Senate. Now, I normally don't have time, because I'm preparing this show or writing an article. One of my problems today was, because I'm writing about the countdown to the government shutdown, I had to add some additional information to the article. And I probably will have to do that Thursday and Friday. And that just takes time. And then the editors have to look at it. I have to make some corrections. So that cuts into my preparation time. But in doing, in preparing that article, I obviously did a lot of research that I can use on the show. And I was discussing with two of the editors. They said, well, technically, that one said, technically, this is not a filibuster. I said, yeah, I understand that. Because it was known in advance that when it became noon today, Senator Ted Cruz would stop. And he did stop. But what his objective was to make the American people aware, first of all, that the Republicans, as well as Senator Cruz, don't want to shut down the government. And see, that's what the House of Representatives voted on. They voted on a continuing resolution which would continue to fund the federal government for the next 11 weeks. For the next 11 weeks. Remember, the fiscal year starts 1 October. Fiscal year 2014 starts 1 October, only a few days away. Yet we don't have a budget. We don't have an appropriations bill that appropriates money for fiscal year 2014. So what has Congress been doing for the last several years? They've been voting on continuing resolution, both by the House and the Senate. What that is to you can either continue funding at the current level, an expanded level or more spending, or at a reduced level. What has been happening for the last several years, I'm somewhat simplifying here, is we've had a continuing resolution that keeps funding at the current levels. The problem, if you listen to yesterday's show, is, well, that might sound reasonable, but it isn't, for the simple reason that results in a budgetary deficit where government spending exceeds total tax collection of upwards of $1 trillion, slightly more, slightly less. So we're never going to get to a balanced budget with continuing resolutions that fund at the current level. We're just perpetuating the problem. Both political parties are party to this. Now, I'm not in favor of a continuing resolution that funds all the departments at the current level. Now, if you want to do a continuing resolution that actually cuts spending significantly, okay, great. The problem is on these resolutions have to be joint resolutions where the House and the Senate have to agree to the resolution. That's why it's a joint resolution, joint continuing resolution. And then the Senate, once they both agree, the House and the Senate agree on the language, there are no differences in the language, then it goes to the president for his signature, and that enables the government to stay open. It's not hard to understand. In other words, whatever every department's budget was last year, it will continue at that level. It won't be cut. It won't be expanded or increased. It'll be at the current level. That's departments, agencies, and programs. Now, the reason why I'm not happy with that at all, and neither are the majority of the American people, because what the majority of American people are seeing, for five fiscal years, the average deficit is over $1 trillion. Now, we don't know, and we won't know to mid-October, what the deficit was for this year. But if you average in what it will be, the average for those 5 years, fiscal year 2009, 10, 11, 12, and 13, the average will be in excess of $1 trillion. It could be 1.1, 1.2, but that's what it's going to be. And you can't keep doing this year after year. Now you say, well, we've been doing it for 5 years. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. And what's happening? Your purchasing power of your money is going down, point one. Point two, you're not confronting or dealing with the problem. You're making the situation worse, because you're piling debt upon debt upon debt. It's like an individual who's used to a standard of living much higher because at one time he had a much higher salary. Let's say at one time you had a monthly salary of $10,000. You lost that job, and today you have a salary of $3,000. $10,000. But you're used to the standard of living of having $10,000. So you have credit cards. When you try to spend the money, you're always short. You might even cut back, but you want to spend, let's say, $6,000, and you only have $3,000 of salary coming in. So you start running up your credit cards. And when you've maxed out one, you get another one, maxed out another, get another one, maxed out another. Well, at some point, what happens? You can't make the minimum monthly payments. The banks will not increase your limits. In other words, you've maxed out. It could be $2,000, $5,000, $10,000, whatever the limit is. You start going to other banks. Initially, you might be able to get two or three more credit cards. But word gets around. You have a credit report, and it reflects the fact that you have several credit cards that are maxed out. Well, when you go to other banks, they're going to look at that and say, you're poor risk. You can't pay it back. You're not earning $10,000 anymore. You're only earning three. And to pay the minimum payments, you're having trouble. You start to fall behind. Well, what the federal government has been doing year after year after year, they don't have a credit card. Now, I know some in the government do have credit cards. That's not my point. The way this whole, all these deficits where spending exceeds total tax collections by over $1 trillion, the only way this can happen is the Treasury Department, Department of the Treasury, under which is the IRS, by the way, but the Department of Treasury sell security. In other words, the United States is going into debt. Now, they sell notes, which are short-term, they sell bills, notes, and bonds. The difference between the three is the length of the borrowing, like 90-day Treasury bills or 5-year notes or 10-year notes or 30-year bonds. You decide, the Treasury decides, okay, what are we going to sell, short-term, medium, or long-term bonds? And a lot of times it's a function of what the interest rate is for that. So what's happening is normally there's a great demand for Treasury securities, not only in the United States amongst financial institutions, but also across the world. When we're approaching either a recession or depression or a period of unstable situations that might lead to war or major crisis, there's a flight of capital into safety, and one of the asset classes that investors, hot money, if you will go into, and it's usually temporary, are Treasury securities. The problem is, as the national debt has gone, as we've run these annual deficits are annual, and I need to make that point. And like I said last show, through August, the deficit for fiscal year 2013 that ends September 30th, less than a week from now, was at $755 billion. If we look at 2009, 10, 11, and 12, for 2009, I'm giving you round numbers. Keep it simple. I'm not going to give you the exact number, but it's available. Just go to the monthly Treasury statements and look it up, because they have it monthly and yearly. So in round numbers, 2009, it was $1.4 trillion. 2010, it was $1.3 trillion. 2011, it was slightly under 1.3. And 2012, it was slightly under 1.1. I think this year it'll probably be right around $900 billion. Could be a little higher, could be a little lower. I don't know, and I really don't think the Treasury knows. And the reason why I say that, it depends on how much taxes they collect. And I'm just guessing, but I think you're going to see a deficit in September approaching $150 billion. And if that's the case, then you're looking at right around a $900 billion deficit. We'll probably know this at the earliest around October 10th, but I think it might be late, because usually what we're about ready to, there was an announcement I heard in the news today that the Treasury Department has determined that on October 17th, we will hit the debt ceiling, the national debt ceiling. which says that they can't increase the debt. So what needs to happen is the debt ceiling limit needs to be increased. What the resolution did, the House version of the continuing resolution did, was keeps the government open. They're not trying to shut it down. They're keeping the government open for an additional 11 weeks. And what they'll do after 11 weeks, they'll extend it again. So they're not, and at current levels, that's the key thing. Now, the reason why we're getting a lot of news stories on this, and you need to be, I'm going to be crystal clear on that, the Republicans will fund the entire government for 11 weeks with one exception. They took out funding for Obamacare, which is the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. Now, the president not only won't like it, he won't sign any bill that excludes his number one legacy. I would say his number one disaster would be more like it. But that's his pride and joy. He said, I don't mind you calling it Obamacare, even though technically that's not the name. Technically, the full name is the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. And what most people do, including reporters and commentators, they call it Obamacare. Initially, that was a negative, but the Democratic Party, including President Barack Obama, they like it now, so it's commonly referred to as Obamacare. That's the shorthand way to refer to it, and that's what I'm going to do. Because I don't want to repeat, this is the last time, I don't want to repeat the full name. Some will say it's the Affordable Care Act. Well, technically, no. It's the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. And I'm not going to go in the history on the names and all that. Obamacare. And it's been subject to, you see, the Democrats thought that by now more people would be in support of Obamacare. It's the exact opposite. More and more people have come to the conclusion that Obamacare is a bad idea, and there are polls showing that. And it's roughly about 2-1, not quite, but roughly 2-1. Now, I was writing an article, and I was looking up a recent poll by NBC and the Wall Street Journal. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but roughly 2-1. And I will publish as for the page or my notes on it. I will include the article there so you can look at it. But if you're interested, just type in NBC/Wall Street Journal WSJ and put Obamacare, and it'll pop up and you can look at the numbers yourself. So increasingly, Obamacare is just not popular. And there are a lot of polls, and typically at the low end, about 50% disapprove on the and that I've seen as high as in the 60s, but that is are not in favor. If they disapprove it, they like it repealed. And then you typically have somewhere between 35% to as high as 45% that actually favor it. But the majority, it's very clear that the majority of the American people would want Obamacare repealed. And that I really think is going to, the percentages in that are going to go up, up, and up. Because what's happening is people are getting from their insurance companies letters saying, as of a certain date, we no longer will be offering the plan that you're covered by. And if you want to continue coverage with our company, we offer several plans. We all have a bronze. Well, let me back up. If your employer is not purchasing your insurance, you have to go, in other words, you're an individual and you're buying coverage either for yourself and your spouse and your children. In other words, you don't have coverage through your employer. You're going to have to go to these exchanges. In Texas, we don't have one, but you're going to have to go to these exchanges. And there'll be companies there that will have plans. And they have, and the way they're labeling these plans is bronze, silver, gold, platinum. The idea being the platinum is your better plan. Your bronze is your cheaper plan. You get what you pay for, and as you go up in terms of this, the metal labeling, yeah, you're going to get more benefits, but it's more expensive. And what's happening is people are losing their plans. Remember, Obama said you get to keep your plan, you get to keep your doctor. Well, no, you don't. Because when your insurance company cancels your plan, or when your employer either goes to another carrier or decides to change something about the plan, then what replaces it is a health insurance plan that complies with the regulations under Obamacare. To make it short and simple, you're going to be on another health insurance plan. And for most people, that means their plans are going to be more expensive. And the reason why is the insurance company has to take people that have pre-existing conditions. And the best way to explain that and to make the point, if I wreck my car today, let's say I'm in a wreck, no injury to me, but my car is totally destroyed. I can't then go out and get insurance. They would laugh at me. You know, that's a pre-existing condition. My pre-existing condition for my car is it's total. It's undrivable. It's the same thing with life insurance. If you have a serious pre-existing condition, I have terminal cancer. You're not going to be able to get life insurance. Because in both examples, you're a claim. That's not how insurance works. Insurance is basically the pooling of risk. You know, somebody is going to die. Somebody is going to need medical help. Someone is going to get in a car accident. We don't know who, but we pool. So let's say there are 100 people in the pool. And let's do the car, because that's they have 100 people. Their cars run fine, no problem. Well, the insurance company knows that one of those cars is going to be damaged. And guess what? It happens. So if you have insurance, you bought insurance before your car was wrecked, the insurance company is going to pay. But you can't go out after the wreck and buy the auto insurance. The same way you can't go out after you've been told you have terminal cancer or some serious medical condition and expect to get either life insurance or health insurance, because you're just a claim. A big claim. That's simply not how insurance works. The way this has been set up is if you have a pre-existing condition, now the insurance company has to take you. They have to take you. And it's not one person, it's thousands, millions of people that have pre-existing conditions. So what do you think the insurance company is going to do? If they're forced to take anyone with pre-existing conditions, they're going to price that into the premium that they're quoting you. So I fully expect most people will find the cost of the insurance will be going up. You see, individual health insurance, let me back up one step. Most people have their health insurance through their employer. It's group insurance that the employer decides what company he's going to have the insurance with, what type of plan, what are the deductibles, what are the co-payments, what are the lifetime maximums are. And it's really a function of the affordability of the plan. Now, if you have employers that are very, very successful and want to keep their employees, they tend to go to the better plans or the so-called Cadillac plans. They want to do right by their employees. They want to keep them. Usually the owner and his spouse and his children are covered by that as well. So he wants first of all, a company for a good reputation for paying the claims, financially sound, has all the high ratings. And then he looks at the plan. He wants to make sure it's a comprehensive medical plan, covers everything, either has no lifetime maximum or like a $5 million. So he does a little tailoring, but it's all the employer deciding what to buy. Some employers simply can't afford that and will try to get some form of health insurance, usually not the best plan. And to the extent over time they become successful, many employers will move to a better and better plan. And that's a little background. But now, under Obamacare, the insurance company, these are large insurance companies, have to take everybody, and it's community rated. In other words, it's the same price for everybody in the community, usually bracketed by age. And those plans, especially when you have to, when it's community rated and you have to take everybody with the pre-existing condition, I will tell you right up front, those are going to be considerably more expensive than your existing plans. Nothing, you don't have to be a rocket science to understand that. Also, keep in mind that some people, depending on their income, will qualify for subsidies, where the government will pay some or all of the premium. You have to be low income for that. And I think that's what has made Obamacare attractive, because some people simply either don't have the money, or they have the money but they don't want to spend it on health care, are attracted to the fact that under Obamacare they will get subsidies. Well, who pays for those subsidies? The answer is you and me, the people under the insurance plans. So that ups the premium as well. There's no free lunch here. You get what you pay for. And while you do have a limited amount of choice, whether it's the bronze, the silver, the gold, the platinum, which metal plan do you want, there's really not competition. Yeah, you can go with different companies, but the companies, in essence, are providing very, very similar, if not identical, plans. Yeah, they've standardized it, but it's going to be more expensive. Obamacare was sold to the American people as it will be a reduction in premium of $2,500. No, it's not. It's going to cost you more money. How much? I don't know. But enough. It's not a reduction. One study I saw, it's roughly about $750. Family of four, an additional $750. I'm always leery of those types of studies, because to do an apple-to-apple, do a good comparison, you got to take your existing plan and really know what you have in it. Most people can't do that. And then compare it with one of these new metal plans. You want a comparable plan. So at first you might think, well, listen, this bronze plan here is less expensive than what I have today. And it might very well be. But if you actually do an analysis of what the benefits are, yeah, the bronze plan is less, might be. Let me emphasize, it might be less expensive. I don't think it will be. I think it'll be even more expensive. But if you do a meaningful comparison, you probably find out the benefits of your current plan are more than one of these bronze plans. I think typically you're probably going to have to go to a silver, gold, or platinum to get near the comparable coverage. And if it is a apples to apples, both plans are more or less the same. They're never going to be identical, but close. You're going to be spending more money. And there's no secret why, because all these people with the pre-existing condition have to be covered by the insurance. That in and of itself will mean your cost or your premium will be higher. So you were lied to. You're not going to keep your same, you most likely will not be able to keep your same doctor. You will definitely not be able to keep your same plan, and most likely your plan will be more expensive. Now, you're going to hear stories today, and I've already seen several of them. Some are saying it's going to be actually cheaper. Some say it's going to be a lot more expensive. It all depends where you live, your age, your health, what plans you're interested in, what plan you had. You see, individual coverage is different from group. Group, typically you might answer one or two questions, but it's not medically underwritten because you're part of the employer's group. That might be 10 people, 20 people, 30, 40, 50 or more. So that they typically do not ask you any specific medical questions. Individual coverage is not that way. You're going to be asked a series of questions. And the reason insurance companies in the past did that, because based on the information you submit, as well as reports from the Medical Information Bureau, MIB, the underwriting department makes a decision whether or not you get their coverage. This is in the past. Now, everybody has to be, if you apply for one of these plans, whether it's bronze, silver, gold, or platinum, and think of it as a bare minimum plan to a maximum benefits. If you want to think in terms of cars, think of it as the lowest entry-level car to the top-of-the-line Cadillac or Lexus. So, yeah, you do have some choice still with these different plans, but the problem is you're going to be spending more money. It might be with a different carrier, which you're not familiar with. And another aspect is and what's going on, the insurance companies are profit-making companies, and they negotiate with both hospitals and networks of doctors associated with hospitals. And what they tend to do is, and there's been a New York Times article on this, is rather than going to the large hospital that really can service everyone's needs but is more expensive. Let's say in a state you have 25 hospital doctor networks. 10 are in the major cities. The rest are scattered out through the states. They're negotiating primarily with the ones that are not the large full-service hospital but one of the others. And the problem is that hospital or doctor may be 30 minutes away, an hour away, or more. So you got a convenience factor, but it really, especially if you're elderly and don't drive, it puts a burden on it. The quality of the benefits you're getting is really declining because it's nothing against the doctors or the hospitals in that network, but they have a limited range of what they can treat. Usually, you have specialists, and the specialists are the more expensive, and they tend to be in your large cities, large hospitals, where they treat anything, and you have access to specialists. But now what they're doing is, you buy one of these plans, and you find out you're in a doctor network that, guess what, doesn't have your doctor, point one. And point two, doctors have admitting privileges to a hospital, and instead of the hospital that's right near you, like down the street, this one you have to drive an hour to. So what you have is you have a plan. You spent your money on something that really doesn't meet your needs. See, what's going to happen is as people become aware of the specifics, and the first thing they're going to focus in on is the price, and they're going to notice, it's going to be hard not to notice, that I'm paying significantly more money. And then when they start to dig into that, when they compare what they currently have with what's available, yes, they might find a plan that's very comparable to what they have. It might even be better, but it's going to be significantly more expensive. And that's where the Affordable Health Care Act angle falls apart. It's not going to be, for many Americans, they can't afford it. They're going to have to settle for a plan that, within their budget, in other words, they might pay a little bit more or might even be a little bit less, but they don't get the benefits that they have now. And what's even worse, can't keep their doctor. They can't go to the local hospital. They have to go out in the boondocks. And this is what's happening when people actually put pencil to paper and start comparing it. So the big lie that was used to sell this, you get to keep your doctor, keep your plan, and your premiums will actually go down. All three of them, you've been deceived. They're lies, but you've been deceived. And now the American people are waking up to that fact. And when they do, some people are faster than others, the popularity of Obamacare will go down, 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 and down. And the unpopularity of Obamacare will go up, up, and up. Now, I've somewhat did a detour, but... And that's just so you understand the product Obamacare. Right now, starting 1 October, a week away, actually less than a week away, if you don't have coverage through your employer, you're going to have to go to one of these exchanges they're setting up and buy coverage that goes into effect 1 January. Now, you have a choice. If you don't want to do that, and a lot of people won't because they simply don't have the money, you can pay a penalty. And initially, that penalty is low, but it quickly goes up. The problem if you go that route, and I think many millions of people will go that route, that they're either not paying attention to it or say, listen, I only have so much money. I don't want the IRS on my case. I'll pay the penalty. But that penalty will jump up, up, and up. And pretty soon, after 4 or 5 years, it makes more sense. Initially, it'll be less than the premiums you had to pay. But before you know it, the penalty will be more than the premiums you have to pay. So for a short period of time, maybe the penalty makes sense to you. Now, you won't have health insurance. And what many people, I think, think they're going to be able to do, and maybe will do, is they wait till they get sick and then go out and buy coverage. You see, when that really starts happening, what do you think the premiums of all these plans, what's going to happen? They're going to shoot up. There's no free lunch. There's no way you can cover 30 million additional people and that costs money. The money has to come from somewhere. Now, another angle to this is really, what is Obamacare really about? Cut through all the details. What are they trying to do? They're trying to force young people, typically between the ages of 18 and 29, to buy coverage, because that is the one group or category of people that are typically do not have insurance. They elect not to buy it for a host of reasons. And it's usually because they believe, and statistically they're right, that they probably won't need it. Yeah, they'll have a cold and can go to the doctor, can pay a doctor's visit. But they truly believe they're not going to have a serious illness. They're not going to have a major operation. They're not going to have cancer or a heart attack or a stroke. They know at some future date that risk will be a lot bigger, especially as they grow older. But when they're young, they think they're invincible. They're never going to die, so they prefer to spend their money on something else. So the way to force these people to buy insurance is the mandate, which is another way to say the government forces you to buy it. And initially, if you don't buy it, you can pay a penalty. But within 10 years, that penalty will be significant. Don't, point one. Point two is, you know, I always recommend have a good, buy your health insurance from a reputable, quality company, and buy the best plan you can afford. Now, if you're just starting out, you know, it's your first, second, or third job, you might be working for a company. First of all, you're not making much money. The company can't afford health insurance. That advice rings hollow. Yeah, if I were making big bucks or 2 to 3 times what I'm making now, yeah, I understand. I probably would buy health insurance, but that's not the situation. The best job I can find is a part-time job stocking shelves. I don't have the money for health insurance. And maybe you're lucky and will qualify for one of these subsidies. You see, the problem is you're forcing people to do what they don't want to do. Many of them can't afford to do. And this is a complicated area. You know, when I was in the business, I could compare plans. Your typical individual, even your typical business owner, can't do that. Now, I would, because I had an interest to get the business as a client, I made sure I pointed out when I was selling, and that's what I was doing. I was a salesman. I would point out why we had, or the insurance company I was presenting, had a very good plan. And I would tailor it to the needs of that business owner that was purchasing that plan for his employees. I wasn't selling. Occasionally, I would have a few people that wanted individual coverage. And individual coverage even then was more expensive than group. But most of the people I was dealing with were business owners that were buying health insurance, wanted very good plans to cover not only themselves and their immediate family, but the people working for them. And I wouldn't sell the garbage. And there's plans out there that on the surface might look good, but they're so-called schedule plans. And I'm getting too much in the details of this. I need to back out. But I'm trying to make a major point. The majority of Americans were totally happy with the existing health insurance situation. They wanted changes. I wanted changes. The big change I want is instead of the group, instead of the employer deciding which plan you have, I think a much better system is enable individuals to buy individual coverage. And when they leave one employer to go to another employer, they don't need to switch health insurance plans. You see, if I go from one employer A to employer B, why would I change my auto insurance? I won't. And the same should be the situation with health insurance. In other words, you want your health insurance to be portable. Now, I'm looking at the time, and I'm somewhat squeezed for time, and I've given a long, detailed account, which I didn't mean to do. But what I'm alerting you to is you need to start calling, if you haven't already, your representative in Congress and your senators, primarily the senators, and tell them you want, whether you're Republican or Democrat, to support Senator Cruz. In other words, you want a united front by the Republicans. You don't want Obamacare. You want to stop Obamacare and defund Obamacare. Because as Cruz goes into detail several times during that 21 hours, what Obamacare is doing is perpetuating these high unemployment rates. And the people that are really getting hurt are the young people. They can't find jobs. We've had persistently high unemployment rates, over 7%, every day, week, or month that Obama has been president. And the primary reason for that more and more businesses either are not expanding or changing full-time jobs to part-time jobs and not offering health insurance to their employees is Obamacare. They can't afford it. So they force you, the individual, to go on the exchange. What needs to be done, it's very clear, Obamacare needs to be repealed. It needs to be defunded. And the only way you're going to get the attention of your representatives, your senators, especially, is you got to call them. And it's important you call them today, tomorrow, and probably Saturday and get the message. And it's very simple. If you don't support Senator Cruz, I'm not going to be voting for you. I'm going to be voting for your opponent in the primary as well as in the general election. That will get their attention because politicians are afraid of one thing, being thrown out of office and losing power. So if you make it very clear to them you want the Republicans to be united behind Senator Cruz and what he's doing, defunding Obamacare, they'll get that message, and you need to do it today, tomorrow, and Saturday. You need to put the fear into them because there are going to be some Republicans and that won't be united, but only with the united front and this and those phone calls ringing in the offices of senators and representatives, can you stop Obamacare? Because if you don't stop Obamacare, we're going to have high unemployment. It will continue. And Senator Cruz, you can go on YouTube and listen to, and I'll have links to it on my page for this show. He gets into that. He explains it. He lays it out. Because he's talked to business owners. And I know what the reaction is. I can't afford Obamacare. And what I'm doing is I'm not growing my business, which means there are fewer and fewer jobs. And I'm converting full-time jobs to part-time. A successful business owner does not want to do that. He wants to expand his business. He wants to keep people full-time. He wants to offer good health insurance. But Obamacare has created a disaster. It's created disincentives to grow. The consequences of Obamacare are millions of people are unemployed, and our businesses are not growing and not expanding. Economic growth is way down the historical trend of a little over 3%. So you need to get on the phone cell phone, whatever, and make those calls. Get the phone number of your senators and call them and call them and tell them you want Obamacare defunded. Keep it real simple. I want Obamacare defunded. Don't fund it. They'll get the message. Because right now, unfortunately, the Republican establishment in the Senate is not united behind Senator Cruz. And that's sad to say. And that's what needs to be happening. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the D.C.